Are you on your quest for your Holy Grail? Is your life journey your vision quest, your meditation, your walkabout? Are you ready to experience a shift in perspective? Welcome to Le Guru Is You Radio with your host, Paul Reynolds.
I want to welcome everyone to this edition of Le Guru Is You Radio. I'm your host, Paul Reynolds, and once again, our mission here at LGIY Radio is to search, explore, uncover, and expose the inspirational in the everyday. Our guest gurus come to our studio from all walks of life, from all parts of the globe, and they share their stories and are willing to open up to who they be and what they've learned here on this stage, I guess we want to call it, and the earth plane. It's really an amazing and intimate gift to those that are willing to listen. And we're not so concerned here about, how many years you meditated at the feet of the guru, or that you wrote a New York Times bestseller, or that you pulled in six figures last year. It's not so much here about what you do, but about who you be. And so we want to thank you, all of you, for taking the time to listen to the wisdom and insight expressed by what could be your mother, your father, your postman, your gardener, just everyday folk. And as you listen to the expression of their heart, listen to what yours is saying. And remember that incredible being that you are. Once again, I'm so honored and excited and thrilled and a little bit overwhelmed, I would say, to welcome in our guest guru for today, and that is Alan. Hi, Alan.
Hello, Paul. So happy to be with you.
Thanks for joining us today. As I said at our beginning preamble, so to speak, I don't get into too much about what our guest gurus do, but I must say that as far as gurus are concerned, in my definition of gurus, Alan has been one of mine over the years, a real standout guru in my way of thinking, and I'm just very grateful for an opportunity to get to have some conversation with one of my favorite gurus. So thanks again for coming, Alan.
And thank you. I appreciate
sure. I like to think of our gurus, and there's lots of definitions, and one of the things we do in this conversation, Alan, is to ask for definition, because when words are tricky little items, but one of the definitions I have for a guru, or one of the qualities I know of a guru, is that they're consummate expert listeners. And if I was to characterize Alan to our listening audience, he's probably one of the Rembrandts of listeners that I know of anyway. So I'm going to start out in this vein of listening, Alan, if you don't mind, and ask you if you can remember felt heard and what that was like for you, that experience and the quality and maybe just a little bit around it. Do you remember?
I was 13 years old, and I lived in a horrible section of the city, and I was pimply-faced and had braces, and I was kind of gawky, and I didn't think much of myself. And I went for a summer vacation to visit my friend in my cousin in Wilmington, Delaware, and she took me to this community pool one afternoon. And I met a man at poolside who introduced himself as Mr. Simmons, and he was a high school teacher. And he began to ask me questions about myself and my life and my passions and my interests. And, there's nothing special about what he said, but the attention he gave me was focused and compassionate and present. And really, 10 minutes in with him was really transformational. And he didn't give me any advice, and I never saw him again. But there was something about the way he loved me by listening to me that sank in. And that was many years ago. I'm far beyond 13 now. But isn't it interesting, Paul, that I remember 10 minutes with a man who truly cared about me. It was his presence that healed me, not his words.
I can acknowledge that in a big way. I understand, it really resonates with me. And I know that many of the people that come and have you listen are experiencing the very same experience. When you listen to Alan in these days, okay, Alan listening to Alan, what is it that you hear?
It's a good question, because for a long time I listened to this crazy voice of scatteredness and ego and grievances and blah, 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 blah. And I thought that was Alan. But it wasn't. It was some ridiculous parody of Alan that I learned along the way. So a lot of my work these days, Paul, is about getting below that voice and hearing the voice of confidence and ease and trust and connection and vision and all the things that really drop me into the deepest core of my being. And when I'm there, I'm there. I know it. It feels good. It feels 1,000% qualitatively different than that nutty voice that just goes on and on and on and on.
Now, that nutty voice is still there occasionally, yes?
Quite more than occasionally. But it's lightening up. Let's put it this way: I don't give it the same attention I used to.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing from a lot of the people that I interview. It's not like we push this, as you call it, the nutty voice away forever. I mean, it doesn't go away; it's always there. But the quality of conversation that we have with it and the time we spend with it, it's a right. little bit less. Yeah.
Well, I think like if you had a crazy employee, how much would you listen to them? Like, you would listen to your employees who are, more connected to spirit.
But I'm just wondering too, Alan, just as you posed in that the first time you were heard, those crazy employees, maybe that's all they're asking for too, is they're, to just to have a little bit of time to be heard and then you don't see him again for another 40 years or whatever that is, It's just like the ego, and I guess we could kind of consider the little crazy voice, this thing called ego, It's just this frightened little boy that needs to be heard sometimes, just wants to make sure that, he's not threatened, right?
Well said. Lovely said. Thank you.
Give us a few examples that you know of, and it's probably in the same vein as who have been your gurus on the way up, that are really these consummate listeners, these amazing listeners that you've experienced.
Well, Ram Dass lives on Maui, and he's become a dear friend. And, it's... To me, I would like to replace the word listening with presence, because that,
sure.
Of course, it's equal, of course. But when I'm with Ram Dass, he's really there, and the guy's in a wheelchair and there's a lot of physical limitations, but he's so present. He's having so much fun, and he's just. He shows up in a way that there's no place else I would rather be. And he loves me for who I am, and he speaks from his heart, and he's honest. And it's like cultivating a connection that's based in integrity and a Velcro of souls, if you will, that supersedes the normal chit-chat that we usually fall prey to.
Sure, and we're surrounded every day by this, what I call a cacophony of things that want your attention, And it sounds like, Ram Dass, I consider one of, my favorite teachers and gurus, too, that Ram Dass is sort of like the present-day Mr. Simmons for you. I mean, he established that presence, huh? Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because... I'm writing a book about grace and looking back on my life. I'm writing another book about soul and destiny. And what I've noticed, Paul, is that there's always been someone there, whether it's Mr. Simmons or a Ram Dass or a mother or a beloved or a pet, that, when you need the gift, when you need healing, when you need love, when you need presence, there's always somebody there. Even if it's an invisible somebody, it could be Jesus or a spirit guide. But, you know, we're never bereft of help. And to me, that's a great solace.
And sometimes that help, don't you think, Alan, and I don't know, this is my observation on this, that help isn't always one of, come here, darling. Sometimes that help is a little bit on the rough side, a little bit, you know, I got to get your attention here.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because I was listening to a Bashar, B-A-S-H-A-R, lecture on karma. And he said that, you know, most people think we have good karma and bad karma, but even the bad karma is good because it's a balancing act. The universe is saying, okay, you're headed in a direction that's really going to hurt you if you continue. So let me just get your attention. Sometimes it's rather stark, as you know. And let me just get your attention because you're out of balance here. And what this, quote, bad karma is going to, whether it's an accident or an illness or health, or, you know, whatever it is, it's calling us to get back on track. And in that sense, it's a real blessing.
Yeah. It recalls this, that old Sufi poet Hafiz used to say, love sometimes like to take you up by your ankles and turn you upside down to shake all the nonsense out. So, yeah.
Well said.
I really love that. In terms of your learning these days, Alan, what's the biggest puzzle that's come up for you lately? What are you working on?
Good question. I think we're back to discerning between the voices of fear and love. And, I'm a Course in Miracles student and teacher, mm-hmm. and the Course says that every thought you have, every word you speak, every action you take can be boiled down to either fear or love. So I've really had my sensors up lately to determine whether this voice is speaking from fear or speaking from love inside me. And if speaking from fear, what I'll do is, okay, if I were willing to listen to an alternative voice, the voice of love, what would that say? And, you know, all of a sudden my shoulders drop and my solar plexus relaxes and I realize, okay, there's another way of listening, of handling this. And you may end up still, you know, having the same conversation with somebody, but the place you're coming from is entirely different, and that creates an entirely different result.
Gotcha. Yeah. In your journey, I guess if you want to call it this item called life, when did you find that, do I want to call it a talent resided in you that, to be able to listen to people or create a space where they really felt heard? Did this come on in an early time for you, or was this a long time development, or how did it work for you?
It was a long time development. When I was 14, I joined this temple synagogue youth group, and the youth director was very, very inspiring to me, and he propped me up and encouraged me to run for president of the youth group. And before long, I was making speeches to the kids and the adults, and he would, you know, they were pretty good, actually, I have to say. And all of a sudden, I found myself doing something I really loved and helping people. So it worked. It was natural. It came so naturally that I never stopped since that day.
but there's always a refinement process that goes along. It's kind of like aging, I think, kind of, you know?
Yeah.
You're always refining and finding new ways, and that's what makes it exciting, I think, passionate.
Well, that's true. That's true. And And I think there was another quantum leap when I was in graduate school. I got involved in what they called in those days sensitivity training or counter groups. And you know, you go off for a weekend with a dozen people to a cabin, and you just, you know, you just get emotionally naked. You talk about what's going on and who are you and what are your fears and where you're hurt. And it was kind of stuff we do now, but in a more rudimentary form. And I began to hear people talk honestly about what helped them and hurt them. And I realized that the facade that most people present to the world is not who they are, that we live a double life, that we have an inner life and a life of image management, and a life of presentation. And I began to see that everybody was fighting an inner battle, and everybody had hurts and fears. And I gained a lot of compassion for what goes on inside of people in relationships. Can I tell you one really interesting vignette? Would you like to?
Please. Oh, yes, please.
So we were doing this retreat, and there was a, in the group, there was a lawyer. He was a really gruff guy. He was a really nice guy, but a really kind of a hard-boiled exterior. He's probably 50-ish. And there was a young woman in the group, maybe, I don't know, 25 or 30. And he was very young and very masculine, and he was not sensitive to what goes on inside of women. So she said, "Come here." And this was in the presence of, I don't know, 15, 18, 20 people in the group. And she said, "Touch my face." And his wife was sitting next to him. So, you know, it was an interesting dynamic. And she said, "Touch my face." And so he closed his eyes and he put two hands on her face and he began to explore her face. And she said, "No, that's too rough. Try it this way." She said, "You're getting better, but I would like it more like this." And over a period of about 5 or 10 minutes, she was training him in how to care about a woman. And it was an interesting process because it was essentially nonverbal. But I just saw her give him feedback as to how his gruffness was off-putting and his sensitivity and his tenderness was healing. It was an amazing thing to watch. And you know, I've been doing this for many years, and I remember that as one of the pivotal points where I saw how simple honesty about how you're experiencing someone or something can be healing to them if you're both interested in using it that way.
This, I want to go back to this development of this, the presence that you're creating an art form about. Has there been, well, everybody has these things, and I call them Everests, and they're either places in our life that we decide that we're going to take on and climb, or some that we reluctantly say, well, I got to go there for some reason. What have been a couple of those maybe in Alan's life that you've taken on and either scaled or maybe you're still on them? I don't know.
Let me think for a moment about this. At one time, I was called upon to participate in a legal deposition, and I was not looking forward to it, and because I'd heard lots of bad things about what happens in depositions. And I resisted and avoided, but I had to do it. And I was kind of nervous about going. And I called up my friend Esther Hicks, who channels Abraham. And I asked her for some prayer and support. So she said, "Would you like to talk to Abraham?" I said, "Well, sure." I'm sure a lot of our listeners know who Abraham is. And so she put Abraham on. And Abraham said, "What makes you think it's going to be a bad experience?" I said, "Well, I heard this and that, this and that." She said, "Would you be open to it being not so bad and even pleasant?" I said, "Well, I never thought of it like that." She said, "Don't go by the realities that other people have created for themselves. You have the power to create this in an entirely different way if you choose." And they said, "By the way, we'll go with you if you like." Not physically, but
gotcha.
In spirit. So I went, and it was actually quite pleasant, and I had a really good connection with the attorneys, and at the end he said, "Oh, it was so nice to meet you." And it was short. And, you know, that was kind of a scary experience, but I realized it was scary only because of my fear and resistance around it. And when Abraham assisted me to drop that, it turned out in an entirely different way. So I kind of like to use that as a model for how we hold definitions of things that are going to be hard. And they don't have to be. It's just the way we're thinking about them that makes them hard.
Sure, sure. And so those Everests, and I couch that as a difficult challenge. It's all on a perception basis then. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
Ever. And you know, and some people climb Everest speak out of joy. They're just, this is fun.
Exactly. Some people love challenges. Let me do this. And you know, I do like to believe that we choose our Everest from a soul level. Mm-hmm. That we attract experiences to us because on some level we're going to grow and change and heal because of it. So even though our conscious mind resists, the deepest part of us draws it to us for a reason.
Sure. I'd like to open now, if I may, the Alan Cohen Dictionary for a while. Because as I'd mentioned in the first part of the show, that words are often limited constructs to convey feelings. And I know words are a big part of your expression. So in these interviews, similar terms, similar words come up again and again, and it's interesting to see what people think of them. So I'm going to throw a couple at you. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. Big one. God. What does God mean?
To me, it means the source and essence and intelligence and love that created the entire universe, lives within each of us in our heart, and calls to us, remember it as the keystone of our life.
Okay. That'll do it. We'll see you on the next show. that pretty much says it all. Thank you. Wow. Love. You put love in there.
It's the experience that matches our true nature. It's the most joyful, rewarding, completing experience that affirms why we're here. It's everything. Everyone does everything ultimately for love. Mm. Sometimes it's skillful, sometimes it's not skillful. But it's the glue that holds the universe together and the purpose that we were born to experience.
Thank you. I asked you earlier about puzzles and questions that are, you know, that you're working on. And I know you and I have gone through this particular experience about the same number of years almost. And it comes into this time in our lifetime that there is a word that comes up, you know, just on the periphery a little bit, but it's still there. And it's this word called death. Can you define death for us?
It's the changing of form. It's the end of one use of a form and the letting go of that which no longer serves to make space for something else bigger that will serve at the next level. It exists only in the world of form, but not at all or ever in the world of spirit or energy, because energy just keeps going on, but bodies don't, but life does.
Hmm. Got it. In your career as the ultimate listener, or just for lack of a better term at the moment, you have heard many, many questions from men and women. I don't know if you've even kept count over the years at all. Are there categories of questions? Are there some questions that come up from people that are, what do I want to say? More often than not, you've heard it more, this particular question than anything else that people express?
Yeah, well, there are a couple categories of questions,
okay.
And then I'll take you over. Well, the two things that people are most interested in are relationships and prosperity. That's where most people get hung up. That's where most people have the most challenges. That's where most people have the most need of guidance and the most questions. So, you know, people are most interested in how do I get my relationship world together and how can I be prosperous? So those are the venues for the questions. However, as you well know, it runs deeper than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the real question behind it is, am I worthwhile? Am I lovable? Am I valuable? Do I deserve to have what I want? Can I really have love in my life? Can I enjoy a relationship that meets me at the soul? So it, you know, you can peel most of the questions back to a sense of deservingness and trust and the presence of God, the presence of love. I think I saw in some search engine that the question that most people ask, believe it or not, is who am I? And, you know, it kind of comes back to that too, doesn't it? If you think that you're a measly little worm on the face of the earth that's consigned to hell because you didn't do enough Hail Marys, well, you're going to be in deep doo-doo.
Yeah.
But if you recognize that you are an eternal spirit, an extension of God, beloved of God, that you deserve to be here, that you are really the ruler of your kingdom, of your life, that you have infinite riches and blessings available to you, well, that puts a different spin on everything, doesn't it?
Sure. Of course. Well, in the same vein then, and I'm speaking from the vantage point of a yoga teacher for 20 years or so.
Yeah.
And it still baffles me a little bit as to why the majority of the people that attend the classes are of the feminine energy. Okay, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, thumbs down, 10 to 1 almost sometimes.
Yeah.
Does that translate into the people that you work with too?
Duh. you're in my program. You know the answer to that.
I know.
Yeah, we...
And why do you think that is then?
Well, I believe me, I've thought about this for years.
Yeah.
And I do get generally a lot more women than men. But it's for this reason that yoga and healing and coaching and spiritual growth are more connected to our inner life.
Mm-hmm.
They tap into the invisible dimension of our existence. They tap into the spirit and the heart. And they're not so concrete and they're not so touchable and tangible. And they're more about the mystical and the inner. And, you know, men in our culture are more attracted to logical, rational, give me 5 steps to do this. How am I going to earn my 100 grand? What do I need to do? How do I fix my car?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, the masculine side of us, of this culture, really is all about getting it done. And the feminine side of the culture is all about being. And teachers like you and I, and, you know, yoga in general, is concerned more about being than doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in general, it attracts people who are more interested in learning about being than doing. There's certainly a lot of teachers out there to teach doing, and people find them, but not so much in the domain that you teach in or that I teach in.
Right.
Does that make sense to you, Paul?
Yeah, it does. It does. And you're kind of preaching to the choir there. I was curious. I was curious. I'm going to get back to this word guru here too. So first of all, will you define that for me as to what you feel a guru is or does or however you want to put it?
Well, the literal definition of a guru is one who leads one from the darkness to the light.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we've all heard the acronym GURU. The real guru says GURU.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, we've all heard that. So it's really anyone or anything that guides us from illusion to truth, from fear to love, from darkness to light. And it can be a person. It could be a yogi. It could be a child. It could be a pet. It could be a lover. It could be a tree.
Sure.
So, you know, there's a guy named Harvey Freeman. He was a kind of a guru type back in Portland many years ago. And he wrote a book called God is the Guru. And I like that title because, you know, they say if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. Which means that, if you try to stuff God into one person or one body or one form, you're gonna miss out on the rest of God. So, you know, my belief is that God is the guru, and God finds us through mortal gurus and books and yoga classes and trainings. And it's just the wisdom of the universe that loves us so much that it's willing to speak to us through one of a million different forms.
Sure. All right, I'm going to ask you, well, I don't know if this is a tough question, but I know that I've experienced it as a yoga teacher over the year. And just like this program, our purpose, if you will, is to set up a space for people to be who they want, who they need to be, right? And not much more than that. However, people will have a tendency to tack on to you the perception that you are the one with the answers.
Right.
And put you up on a pedestal that is pretty precarious. And we've seen many guru fall from that pedestal over the years. How do you deal with, and has it been an issue for you over the years? Has this been a voice that's come to Alan that needed to be listened to?
I've written books about this, Paul. Or at least in every book I've written something about this.
Okay.
So when I first started writing and my books became popular, I started getting fan letters from people. And the word fan is a shortened word for fanatic. That's where the word came from.
Okay, I'm raising my hand. I did it. I did that too. Okay.
Well, you know, there's a difference between appreciation, admiration, and fanaticism.
Okay.
And a lot of these were from women. And they made up big stories about me, and I was their soulmate, and their lover, and their guru, and their healer, and yada, 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 yada. And I have to admit, in the early stages, I was kind of fascinated with, hey, this is cool, this person thinks I'm wonderful. And so I cultivated communication with them. However, and this is big capital however, I found a pattern that at some point, sooner or later, I would get an angry letter from them. They would be castigating me for not being who I said I was, and you let me down, you disappointed me, and yada, yada, yada. And I would read these letters, and I realized that I had never said I was that person, but it was who they wanted me to be, who they saw me as. They had put me on a pedestal, and then when my humanness showed up, they blew me off.
Mm-hmm.
And so it did not take long, Paul, before I realized that those letters are really dangerous. Dangerous not because they could hurt you, but because they were setting up a dynamic that was really a disservice to both people. And so I at some point stopped cultivating them at all.
Right.
And in fact, I started holding those people at arm's length because I did not want groupies in my space or worshippers in my space. I'm just another person. I'm just on my own path. I'm not no better than anybody. And so and I've done that to other people. I've put people on pedestals, lovers and women and gurus. And I came up with this phrase that pedestals always crash on those who worship before them. And someone else said that it only takes a 6-inch fall for a halo to become a noose. That's my favorite one. So I'm very, very sensitive to that dynamic, and I really don't participate in that on either side of the fence at this point.
Well, I really appreciate you being honest and open with us today about that, because I know that tendency to put, you know, as you say, at arm's length can it'd be tough when you're trying to keep an open space for everybody and love all at the same time, yeah?
Yeah. Well, you know, participating in somebody's dysfunction is not a form of love.
This is true.
And so you help them more by encouraging them to be. Plato said that true relationship could occur only among equals. So I invite everybody in my classes and my friendships to be equal to me. Not nobody is better or worse.
What inspires you lately, Alan?
Nature. Okay. As you know, we both live in Hawaii. Yeah. And I just sit on my porch and I watch nature go by. And I feel the presence of God. I just see the trees and the wind and the birds and the mongoose and the rain and the ocean. I think, oh, you know, I could not improve on it. Like, this is really, this is really a gift. And so my quiet moments in nature are my church.
Gotcha. And it just, the thought comes to me, and another word comes to me too, is this word called meditation. It comes up a lot in nowadays, right, as to what that's supposed to be and look like. It sounds like to me that that is a big form of your meditation, is to connect that way.
Yeah, it quiets my mind. To me, meditation is the stilling of the monkey mind and the coming back to the quiet inner self, which is not dead by any means. It's not boring. It's very alive, but it's, in comparison to where the monkey mind jumps around, it's still and centered and solid and sure.
Let me flip it a little bit and ask you the question. Are there things in your life now that bring up fear for you?
Well, I can't say there are things that bring up fear, but there are things that I choose to associate fear with.
Okay.
I'm starting to see that. I'll tell you what, I'm starting to see that we make up stories about our lives, Paul. Uh-huh. And like, if I want to be fearful, I can find anything I want to be fearful about. I can be fearful about a pain I'm experiencing, or money, or somebody taking advantage of me, or the weather, or my partnership. And it's like, you know, when you put on the lens of fear, everything is scary.
Yeah.
And 10 minutes later, I will get my head on straight, and none of that is scary at all.
What does it take to put your head on straight? Is there a technique that you use, or does it just happen?
Well, no, I usually have to do something.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I'll go outside and take a walk.
Sure.
I'll do some creative writing. I will read A Course in Miracles. I'll play with my dog. I'll have a conversation with my partner. You know, I know the tricks I need to use to, you know, undo fear. The question is, am I willing to get up from the computer and walk outside and take a walk for 10 minutes? That's my... If I can get myself outside, I'll be okay, but I have to get up the momentum to walk away.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned in this particular answer aches and pains, and this is often topic in my interviews because it's such a big part of our perception of the world, and that's this vehicle that we call the body. For you, just in general, do you like the make and model that you were given to drive around in? Or maybe you chose it. I don't know. And that's sort of here and there, I suppose.
Do I like my body? You mean what's my relationship with my body? Is that it?
Yeah.
I've loved my body for many years.
Good.
And you know, as I'm getting older, I do feel more aches and pains here and there. But, you know, it's all a workshop. It's all a seminar on consciousness. And if I feel stiff or tired or grumpy, I have to decide what I'm going to do with that. Do I indulge it and say, oh, I'm getting older? Or is there something I can do to change my attitude or change my experience? And I do notice that when I take better care of my body, I sleep well and eat more slowly and eat better and get outside and do some yoga. Mm-hmm. So then I really do have a certain amount of control over how I feel. And, you know, you and I both know people who are very advanced in years, and they're doing really well because they just take care of themselves. Look at Louise Hay. She's probably almost 90 now.
Sure.
And she's in really good shape. And God bless her, you know. And so I really love to seize on role models of people who are defying the thought that age must shut us down. and parlaying the idea that, well, you know, I know some pretty good tricks to stay happy and alive and healthy. Now, let me do them. Whether you do them or not is another story, but the fact that you have a choice to do them sure. is exciting to me.
How about a recent epiphany, Alan? Or a revelation? I don't know. Somebody told me the other day, epiphany squared equals revelation. Okay. anything that comes to you at the moment that you consider an epiphany, something?
Goodness, nothing is popping up of recent times. Let me just think for a moment, see if I can tap into something. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of gardening lately, and I really find that touching the soil and touching living things is very healing to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking out at my front yard now. We built this little mound and put a boot on top of it, and we planted some beautiful purple flowers that are very popular in this region. And for a while there, we didn't cultivate them, and so a lot of weeds came in, and it was kind of like a battle between the flowers and the weeds. And one day, I decided to just go out and pull those weeds, so I did. And it's just amazing, Paul. I'm looking out my window now, and this mound with boot on top of it is almost entirely filled with purple flowers. It's gorgeous. I mean, when you drive in my driveway, you see that, and I realize, I guess it's kind of an epiphany that, so I did the analogy that, you know, the flowers are the beautiful parts of my life I want to cultivate, and the weeds were the negative thoughts, or the grumpy thoughts, or the self-disparaging thoughts, or the resistant thoughts, or the judgmental thoughts. And it was just amazing that as I plucked out those weeds, those flowers just took off like crazy. I thought, well, if I could just pluck my negative thoughts as skillfully, I'm really going to be in big shape here. So it was kind of an inspiration to me to cultivate that which I value and to just get rid of, or at least not indulge that which I don't value.
Yeah, gotcha.
Is that enough of an epiphany for your requirements? I don't know.
I'm epiphanized. It's
okay,
good.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're sort of coming down to our time that we need to end this edition, but I've got two more questions to you that I asked for everybody, and I will say that I believe I'm borrowing this from one of your workshops that I attended, but I want you to look back, if you will, at that... That 13-year-old with Mr. Simmons, I think it was 13 you said, but anyway, the Alan that's stepping into adolescence and kind of take a look at that young man at the moment, and now knowing what you know now, what would you advise Alan as he takes his next step into the world? What would you like to teach him?
Trust yourself. Trust your heart. Trust your goodness. Don't let the fears and limits of the world encroach on your holiness. There's a quote from Goethe that I often share, and it goes like this, that when you finally trust yourself, you will know how to live. And I could honestly say that a lot of my life has been an exercise in practicing trusting myself and letting my intuitions and my joys and my true nature be good enough in spite of the judgments or fears that seem to oppose them.
Sure. Okay, this last question is a tradition in the interviews, and I'm assuming this is almost going to be the same answer, but I'll ask it anyway. So putting you on the dais of the guru one more time, and you're looking out over our vast audience here, but we'll pretend for the moment that you have the ear of every living being on the planet. Before you leave, what would be the most important lesson that you would like them to hear?
Be yourself.
Be
what you were born to be. Be what God created you to be. Trust that what you were created for is indeed your purpose. And as you follow your unique passions and intuitions and inclinations, you will be absolutely true to your purpose and end up serving the planet as well.
Great. Alan, I can't tell you, this has been just like an utter joy for me. I really appreciate it. And I know those that are listening to our fledgling show will really get so much out of it. I want to ask if it would be possible for you to do a return visit someday to us.
I'd be honored. You asked a lot of really great, provocative questions. Thank you. I really enjoyed. You really stimulated me to think deeply, Paul. And I'm sure it stimulated our listeners to go deeper as well.
Thank you. Thank you. So with that, I want to end this edition of The Guru Is You Radio. I'm your host, Paul Reynolds, and from the Big Island with Alan, and from Kauai with me, we want to just say a big aloha, and we'll see you on the next show.
Aloha.
Until we meet again on The Guru Is You Radio, remember, inspire someone today. It's why you are here. You were born with it. You didn't have to go to school for it. It comes when you most need it. Today's experience is brought to you by intuition. Consider it the jewel in your crown as you play the game.